Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Otto Energy Limited FY22 Financial Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mike Utzler, Executive Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. And hello and welcome to Otto Energy's 2022 Financial Year Investor Update Telecom. My name is Mike Utzler, and with me today is Sergio Castro, Otto's Chief Financial Officer. We'll open this call by referencing the presentation, which we released earlier this morning with prepared comments, and following the short presentation, we'll then open the lines to the Q&A. We ask that during the question and answer session that you limit your questions to one plus one as a follow-up to allow as many questions as possible to be accommodated within this hour that we have scheduled. With that, I'm moving, for those of you who may be following on slides, I'm moving to slide two. And as always, with these types of presentations, it's important to begin with calling your attention to the disclaimers and with regards to this presentation, the fact that it does include forward-looking statements, as well as recognizing that throughout this presentation, unless we otherwise specifically note, it will be in U.S. dollars for all financial aspects and considerations. With that, I'll turn to slide three. I think, you know, we open with this being our second investor call with regards to financial results from last year to this year, an opportunity to reflect on the status of the company as you know it and see it on a daily basis. Fundamentally, Otto Energy is listed under OEL on the ASX. We still have 4.795 billion shares outstanding. We've issued 96 million options and or performance rights. And as of Monday, we were trading at 1.2 cents. On the market at close of business. I think importantly, as we announced yesterday as well, you'll reflect the fact that we have $24.9 million cash in the bank. We own 3.272 million shares of Pantheon, which as of September 30th represented a value in U.S. dollars of $3.8 million. We're very pleased to say that as of September 30th, we have made our last debt payment and are debt-free and hedge-free on a go-forward basis across our business. Our share registry is comprised of retail and institutional investment across multiple locations, the U.S., Europe, and predominantly Australia. We've got an 8% holdings within institutional and brokerage accounts, 43% against retail, and in our corporate and or others, 49% held between management executives and one principal shareholder. As you note, you can see our performance over the course of the past 12 months from a share pricing standpoint, having peaked in March, April, along with the overall market in Australia, and settling into a relatively flat overall performance over these past 4 months, which I'm sure we'll talk more about in the Q&A. We have five directors, including myself as Executive Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, with our most recent addition of a non-executive director in John Madden, who has joined the board officially July 1st of this year, 2022. I'll turn to slide four now. Slide four is an opportunity to provide some simple illustration around the fact that while the business fundamentally remains undervalued in both an absolute and relative basis from our perspectives, when you examine it against the backdrop of what has been a very volatile and resounding global shift in investor sentiment and confidences, that when you compare that relative to our peer groups in the U.S. and Australia, and when you compare it to the ASX 200 indice, as well as the S&P indice, over the past 12 months, we've actually outperformed all but in the last 3 months our Gulf of Mexico comparator group that we compare ourselves and measure against. So while none of us believe we have seen and realized the true share price appropriate to the underlying value of our company, we are pleased with the fact that we've consistently outperformed the market over these past 12 months, and it is our challenge, as you recognize, to continue to improve upon that performance going forward, which we'll try to outline some of our expectations. With that, I'm going to move to slide 5 and touch on a few of the 2022 financial highlights that are of significance in terms of our performance over the past year financially, and Sergio will be covering in greater detail more of the financial detail as well as operating detail when I transition to him. But let me touch on those first and foremost. As you can see, the bottom line is we've had the best financial year results since 2015 when the company sold its Galoc assets in the Philippines. It is our strongest financial performance and represents our first profit over a period over the last 7 years on an annual basis. And so we're very, very pleased with those performances. We've seen that reality come from the strength of our underlying asset performance and obviously the fact that we've had significant improvements in the price of oil and gas in the marketplace over the past 12 months, but also a continuing result in the lowering of our overall cost structures, contributing to our abilities to strengthen our financials and our overall balance sheet. But overall, these financial metrics reflect the fact that we've had substantial improvement in our cash flow, in our balance sheet, in liquidity, and as a result of those increasing product prices and our drive on operating cost efficiencies, even against the fact that over the past 12 months we're starting to see a significant increase in the neighborhood of 15% to 17% on the cost of oil field activities as a result of inflationary pressures as well as continuing supply chain challenges that our industry reflects. Sergio, in his review of the operating and financial highlights, will go into greater detail on these financial and operational performance deliveries. I'll move to slide 6. You know, essentially these results have been driven from the standpoint of focusing in a very disciplined manner on our strategy, which is to continue to maximize our existing base assets, to invest in those base assets for the opportunities to accelerate resources to reserves to production in the existing fields, and to strategically, technically, and commercially identify, capture, and invest in new opportunities to diversify our portfolio and to expand our resource base to allow us to increase our potential cash flow, being done so off the back of our strong balance sheet. We recognize that size and scale do matter in the resources industry, and we continue to seek growth organically and inorganically by participating in new opportunities that are being presented in the marketplace, both in those, these existing fields, but also in the new opportunities that we continuously are screening and looking for, as exampled by our recent discoveries in participating in Oyster Bayou South and Mosquito Bay. We are seeking to grow organically, and the participation in the drilling and development of those resources are an important part of that. But we're also continuing to look at the sale or acquisition of existing assets that we can, that our others are looking to sell or that we can use for our own portfolio to continue to strengthen and broaden this. This allocation of capital only occurs if it meets the demanding target return hurdles that we've set, and we'll talk a little bit about those later in the presentation, and continues to be an opportunity to look at how we use our balance sheet against the positioning of distribution of our proceeds back to our shareholders in the form of buybacks or other forms of distributions in addition to investing for growth. I am very pleased with, on this same slide, you know, the fact that over the 2 years that I've been a part of Otto Energy, we've put a tremendous amount of effort into rebasing the fundamentals of the company. As shown in 2020 to 2021, we've achieved a tremendous outcome in the in delivering a strong balance sheet, establishing a very low-cost operating model against our operations, and overhauling the processes and practices of our company to improve our transparency in the manner of that. We're now in a period for 2022 and 2023. We can leverage that strength of balance sheet and company discipline in its operating and financial models to truly look at how we grow the company in terms of resource potentials and in terms of opportunities to acquire and diversify our portfolio. With that, I'll then move to slide 7, which when you look at this, a year ago, we had 3 producing assets. Today, we have 6 producing assets, and we're looking at the opportunities to continuously expand and grow that. We've diversified in both our oil producing side of our operations as well as our gas producing sides, and we'll talk a bit more about each of those. But I'm pleased with the fact that we've doubled our underlying asset base during that period of time. It's been driven by our continuing focus technically and commercially on our knowledge of the Gulf of Mexico, both onshore and offshore. It's supported by the existing infrastructure that allows us to look at low-cost opportunities to develop from a break-even cost perspective. That fiscal and regulatory stability of the Gulf of Mexico and the U.S. Is an advantage to us in terms of establishing confidence in our financial evaluation and assessment. And the markets in which we produce into are very robust and diversified in terms of giving us options on where we sell our oil and where we sell our gas into that. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Sergio, who is our Chief Financial Officer, to provide you with a greater detail on our operating financial 2022 fiscal year performance. Sergio, over to you.
Thank you, Mike. Turning to slide number 8, I want to focus on some of our financial highlights for the year. Operating revenues for the year were $40.6 million, the highest revenues we've achieved in the last 8 years, thanks to the strength of our production profile and current commodity prices. That in turn has led to a robust EBITDAX of $30.2 million, EBITDA of $27 million, and net profit after tax of $15.5 million, which in turn has allowed us to reduce our debt balance to $2.3 million as of June 30, 2022, while at the same time more than doubling our cash balance to $26.8 million at June 30, 2022. At the bottom of slide 8, you can see the improvement in key metrics, and really all of our metrics have shown vast improvements, starting with our exceptionally low gearing ratio of 3% and debt-to-equity ratio of 4%, thanks to our low debt balance, all the way to a 28% return on equity, a 41% return on average capital employed, and a 23% return on assets, which are all measures of profitability. Next is the operating and hedging summary on slide number 9. Overall production was driven by continuing strong performance from our SM-71 and Lightning fields. The drop you see there in 2022 due to normal field decline, but also incorporates the lower than expected delivery from GC-21 in P-Sand. As a result of this, the GC-21 well is currently being recompleted uphole in the DTR-10 sand with first production expected shortly. Also, a second consecutive year of 97% plus uptime reliability from SM-71 and Lightning speaks to the ongoing quality of the infrastructure and operator focus in these fields. A key area of focus externally and internally has been the perception that our hedges have constrained our ability to realize the uplift in oil prices in the market this past year. The reality is our hedge book has continuously been decreasing throughout the year, and it allows for more than 40% of our oil production to remain unhedged throughout the year and participate in the uplift in prices. As Mike mentioned, as of today, our last hedge has now rolled off, and we are now hedge-free as well as debt-free. Moving on to slide number 10, Otto's financial delivery has been a function of our rigorous discipline and adherence to our established financial and operating models, such as, number 1, exploration projects that meet minimum hurdle rates while simultaneously requiring low-risk infrastructure. Number 2, development opportunities within our existing assets and fields first, followed by focus areas where we have expertise, such as conventional plays. And thirdly, transportation contracts with long-standing quality providers that allow us to maximize netback pricing and beneficial product splits. All of this, in turn, leads to increased production, increased profitability, and increased cash flows, which can be used in as a return to shareholders, pay down debt, or to reinvest in the company. And this is all illustrated graphically on slide number 11. The reduction in debt has allowed us to strengthen our debt-to-equity and gearing ratios, yet at the same time improving our free cash flow to allow us to implement one of the previously mentioned strategies. And that's it for the financial and operational review, and I'll turn it back over to you, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Sergio. And certainly, you know, as I reflected and as Sergio has outlined, it is a good summary of our continuing progress of auto. We, in the nature of how we've stabilized our business, how we've strengthened our balance sheet, how we're continuing to focus on improving our overall margins, and positioning the company to continue to grow. A key to going forward to auto is our technical and fiscal discipline, and that will guide our investment decisioning, as Sergio has described. So if I move to slide 13, I wanted to provide, take this opportunity to provide a sense of guidance with regards to what we expect in financial year 2023 as compared to 2022. Our production expectations will be in the range of between 900,000 and 1.05 million barrels for the course of the year, up from our 2022 financial year delivery of 845,000 barrels net. Our CapEx spend is expected to be in the range of between 10 and 15 million. This reflects our intent to invest in 4 to 6 producing wells, opportunities to invest from a wells perspective during the course of the financial year, similar to our strategy in financial year 22. Our OPEX field lifting cost spend will increase in 23 to between 5.5 and 7 million. This is a reflection of the fact that we have 3 new fields coming online, plus GC21 will be potentially significantly increased, and operating costs associated with that increase in the expected production for all 4 of those fields will add real cost to our bottom line operating field lifting cost. Our net field lifting cost will remain at approximately $5 to $6 million. And again, this is in part driven by the nature of the work we're doing to streamline and optimize the company against the backdrop of where operating costs and the cost of doing business is increasing by 15 to 17% against inflationary pressures. So holding flat against that expected increase, we believe represents a significant outcome for the financial year 23. From a planning standpoint, we're looking at a marketplace like many that is highly volatile. We're utilizing within our position a oil pricing scenario of $81 low, a mid case of $91, and a high case of $101, declining over the next 3 years to a then stable flow matching strip prices going forward. From a Henry Hub standpoint, we're looking at testing all of our investments on a gas price basis at $4.50 MCF low, $5.40 mid case, $6.40 high. And while there is not yet a carbon tax, we nonetheless are planning on the basis of best information available, and we do test new projects against the likelihood of a carbon tax being implemented in the U.S. to test its sensitivity to that. And you can see our carbon tax range, which is aligned with EIA estimates in the marketplace between $10 low, $19 mid, and $20 high. So we will continue to be disciplined in our approach to making decisions off of our investments and providing the marketplace a sense of where we expect to go. Part of the reason there is a range associated with our guidance for next year is obviously timing associated with the capture of new opportunities, their subsequent drill and development, or acquisition timing within the overall plan associated with how we presented it here today. I'll close with the last slide, which is basically, again, it's been 2 years for me having joined Otto in September of 2020, in which over the course of this past year, we've continued to position the company. We've developed and clarified its forward strategy. We've continued to increase our operating and financial performance transparency. We've aggressively engaged the marketplace and the investor community by continuing to refresh our website and communication tools. We've conducted numerous investor roadshows and have been supported ably by Euros and Fosters in those efforts. We've developed and deployed our technical and commercial disciplines. We've developed and progressed our opportunities hopper, where we've now screened more than 120 differing opportunities. And this is against a very active market, which for both consolidations, the sale of, and prospect partnering, as well as those seeking capital access. We've expanded our internal efforts to fulfill and better address our ESG considerations against the next 3 to 5 year period. I'm genuinely confident about the company's continuing abilities to progress its growth agenda within the focus that we have in the Gulf of Mexico onshore, offshore, conventional oil and gas arena. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to our operator to take the questions and facilitate the opportunities for a Q&A session. Thank you very much.
If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Jack Cuthbert, who is a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike and Sergio. Hey, just a very quick question. I mean, it's one thing to grow, but if ultimately shareholders are no better off for this growth strategy, I mean, the balance sheet is immeasurably stronger, but there's been next to no movement in share price. Where to from here? I mean, investors want a return, and this thing's spitting out cash with limited EV at present. I mean, you're targeting opportunities. The market is saying you're effectively going to waste this money the way the share price is at the moment. What can you do to change this?
Well, Jack, good to hear your voice again. I would start with saying that, you know, probably no more frustrated than any of us with regards to the fact that we as management and the board continue to believe, on both a relative and absolute sense, that we are undervalued in the marketplace. As you point out, the physical fundamentals of our cash in bank and our cash availability to us against our EV representation on the basis of share price suggests that the market is not valuing our assets for their true resource potentials and or cash flow potentials. I think the challenge for us, Jack, lies threefold. One, to demonstrate that we can continue to grow. We've only just started to establish the fact that we can be disciplined, that we can operate within our balance sheet, that we can identify quality opportunities and have success in investing shareholders' money in the capture of new opportunities, as we've done with Eves, with Oyster Bayou, and with Mosquito Bay. I think the market, you know, number one, wants to see that continuing track record of success in being able to demonstrate that we can grow, that we can replace our reserve base, and that we can expand and diversify our portfolio of assets that gives us greater strength through diversification. Number two, I think we have consistently stated that scale matters. And you know, the market is looking for us to demonstrate that we can grow through strategic acquisitions in addition to through the drill bit. And we need to continue to assess and evaluate those opportunities to identify. And then I think thirdly, the market wants to see what will we do with our cash, having demonstrated that we can grow off of our balance sheet, that we can strategically add assets and diversify our portfolio, that we can then establish an additional framework which allows us to return directly to shareholders in the form of either buybacks or through dividends. Importantly, Jack, to your question, part of the challenge for us has been the need and the desire to want to establish that track record, number one. Two, importantly for us, complete the GC21 recompletion and the importance of that to our portfolio, because the outcome of that well and its potential on a free cash flow basis to its contribution on the bottom line will give us confidence in the nature of our decisioning around continuing to invest through the drill bit, continuing to look at and pursue strategic acquisitions, as well as then place buybacks and or dividends as a part of a three-pronged approach to creating value for our shareholders. I also fundamentally believe there is a point at which the market simply cannot ignore the strength of the company's assets, its cash flow contribution against the EV in the marketplace. It will take time. It has taken time. You know, as we showed in slide three here, we have actually outperformed the ASX 200 and the S&P 200 over the last year. It doesn't feel any better to you and I sitting here as shareholders that we aren't where we expect to be or believe we should be, but I do believe over time we will continue to progress. But an important, just to reiterate and to clarify, an important component of this is completing GC21 and getting that well confirmed as to its nature of contribution on a go-forward basis.
I mean, probably a follow-up question there around that would be lack of sort of market communications for the delay. Clearly, you know, Hurricane Ian no doubt had an impact, but I mean, are shareholders going to get an update how things are progressing? Clearly, first oil was expected, you know, circa a week ago. All correspondence has sort of indicated that. And I guess at the same time, it would be good to get an update as to how other wells are flowing. Clearly, Eve's no initial production's been released to market. Would be good to hear about updated production across Oyster Bayou and Mosquito Bay West as well. I mean, these are clear production profiles the market are looking at and valuing. Is that something that we can expect to see in the next week?
And well said in terms of the next week expectations with regards to Eves, which is producing, but it's in its preliminary cleanup modes, producing to date on a 764 choke. We haven't released volumes at this point in time, but plan to do so as that well finishes cleaning up its completions fluids and stabilizing. But it is producing steadily on a 764 choke. And we expect over the course of the next week to include it as part of an overall operations update. The GC21, as you pointed out, was our last update provided at that point in time, the status of the well in which the lower section of the DTR tin sand had been perforated, frac-packed, and completed. The upper section was being perforated and frac-packed. That's been completed. And then, unfortunately, Hurricane Ian resulted in the Gulf with almost all operators, as you probably saw, having to shut down operations and, in the case of rigs, disconnect in our case and move to safe quarters. The rig is just moving back to location and onto the well yesterday and today. That they'll have to go through the whole process of BOP testing for the lower and upper BOP stacks before latching onto the well. And we're looking at another 7 to 10 days of operations to finalize and complete. We had hoped to be able to announce, obviously, all of the preliminary success status of GC21 with an Eves update and combine that with most recent updates associated with Oyster Bayou and Mosquito Bay West, both wells which are performing extremely strongly. Oyster Bayou in particular continues to increase in oil production significantly above expectations. And so those will be incorporated into an operations update, which we expect to deliver in the next 7 days. I'd like to time it such that I have, you know, best news possible available to the status of GC21. But with the cleanup completed on Eve sometime in the next 3 to 4 days, it will be appropriate to update the market overall on that status.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Chris Christoph, who is a shareholder. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Firstly, congratulations on a fantastic year. And being the number one company on the stock market as per percentage of enterprise value. and probably the number one company as a percentage of cash flow versus market cap. But unfortunately, you talk about opportunities. Your number one opportunity isn't drilling wells and doing any of that stuff. Your enterprise value is about $14 million. Your number one opportunity is a buyback. You know, if you honestly believe this company is undervalued, I don't understand why you wouldn't be doing buybacks.
Well, Chris, excellent question. And as I said, I think importantly, you know, the strategy of buybacks is being considered, along with, dividend distribution strategies associated with that. It has been important from my perspective in leading the company that we deliver on the material opportunities that our existing fields represented, and in particular the South March Island 71 F2 recompletion, which has now been completed and is successfully, and we've updated in our last operations update its performance, which continues to be strong, and GC21. Both of those wells were critical in terms of our forward view on their impact to our cash flow and to our balance sheet that allowed us to ensure that we can operate off of our balance sheet in such a manner that we can invest to essentially replace reserves and translate those reserves into production through the successful drilling and capture of a participation in 4 to 6 wells per year. The company only shrinks year on year if, in fact, we don't find new oil and new gas reserves to replace the million barrels approximately that we're producing or expected to produce this coming year. And so that balance of investing to ensure that you're growing the company by finding resources, converting them into reserves and into production was task one. And demonstrating that we could do so in a technically and commercially disciplined manner that led to quality results, which we're starting to deliver in the outcomes of the 3 wells that we've mentioned in this call several times now. And then thirdly, that consistency of performance then gave us confidence that we could pursue existing producing acquisitions on a selective basis, as well as looking at the timing around share buybacks. And you're right, in this period of undervalued share price performance, share buybacks are a strong consideration. And once we have confidence in our cash flow position, we'll be better equipped to be able to make that decision on how you balance the scale of continuing to invest to grow the company in a resources to reserves to production sense, position yourself to compete for strategic acquisitions that add scale to the company, as well as been using additional capital additional cash as available to consider how you purchase in the marketplace.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Matthew Chen with Foster Stockbroking. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Sergio, well done. Thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to ask about how you guys are thinking about hedging going forward. I know that it's rolled off most recently, but just when your plans there, looking ahead. Thanks.
Well, certainly from a hedging perspective, and I'll let Sergio comment and add his views and perspectives, with regards to the type of vehicles we would consider going forward. At this point in time, we evaluate hedging on a monthly basis, review that with our board to make decisions on the nature of whether to hedge or not. There is tremendous volatility in the market. For the first time since I've joined the company, we are now fully unhedged. I personally believe the September malaise in oil and gas pricing is short-lived, and this is not advice on anybody's part, simply my opinion, with regards to the view that I expect oil prices to be in line with and consistent with the guidance that we've posted here in our presentation and discussed. And so as a result, I believe that we're well positioned to take full advantage as we add this new production between GC21 if successful, as well as the new existing wells that are online and producing, to take full advantage of that in terms of its cash flow consequences. We've communicated in our recent announcements that Oyster Bayou, Mosquito Bay, and the F2 wells contributions alone are adding substantial uplift in our cash flow. The fact that we are unhedged on a go-forward basis will be incrementally additional cash flow, and now debt-free will add $1.5 million a month in additional cash. That all of those things combined plays to the previous question in terms of ensuring that we can continue to grow the company through the drill bit, that we can continue to position ourselves for the right type of strategic growth at scale acquisitions, as well as then look at how we leverage that cash flow in the form of buybacks and or dividend returns to our shareholders on an ongoing basis. And so with that regard, from a hedging perspective, near term, we don't anticipate hedging through the fourth quarter of this year, but every month we will look at that. I'm going to turn to Sergio to let him to describe, you know, the difference in our hedging historically versus our view and how we would hedge going forward if we chose to hedge. Sergio?
Thanks, Mike. Matthew, no, it's a great question. And as Mike mentioned, the hedges that we had had previously that are now rolled off, we had always had via swaps. And we do discuss this monthly, and I get quotes every month as well. And looking at the forward curve now and quotes now, if we were to put some swaps in today, we'd be out of the money right away. And that's just not a position that we want to be in, especially since we're very bullish oil and gas prices currently. Going forward, depending on what the market does, I think our hedge strategy way forward would be to implement some sort of costless collar rather than a swap. So quotes like that always have you, in the near term, there is no mark-to-market. You get a ceiling, you get a floor, and then you get the actual price somewhere in between. So you have a lot more room to run and realize actual market prices. As prices ramp up, that's good. You get to participate in the upside. There is a certain cap, of course. And then as prices come down, you do realize that as well, but there will be a floor. Right now, the floor is much higher than what our current swap was at. So, you know, we were going along just fine with the previous swap. So even if a future costless collar has a floor that's equal to or maybe a little lower than what we were before, we know we can operate in that environment just fine, especially now that we have increased production coming on. So I think going forward, we'd be looking at a costless collar profile.
Thank you, Sergio. And I remind the listeners that, you know, as we publicly pointed out, our current break-even cost is $10, both field lifting and non-field lifting or G&A combined, plus or minus $10 a barrel. And combine that with our targeted $8 to $10 per barrel for new resources to reserves to production, you're looking at a break-even cost of $20 plus or minus BOE against current oil price, gas price scenario, considerably above that. So we remain robust even against a volatile oil and gas market. But hedging-wise, it will continue to be a part of our strategic evaluation. We will look at using costless collars as a way to give us greater flexibility and less exposure to a mark-to-market consequence on a month-by-month basis. But at this point in time, we don't see the need to hedge. Next question.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Graham Nicholas with Global Mosaic. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking the call. Congratulations on the results today. They look very appealing. I've got a few questions, but the first one is I just wanted to try and get my head around what Alaska may be worth and whether do you have an opinion on the likelihood of commercial success in Alaska. And also, Parthenon are about to start an extended production test. Would Otto actually receive any overriding royalty payment for production revenue from the production test?
So very good question. And thank you, Graham, for that. It does give me an opportunity to talk about our position in Pantheon. I can't obviously speak to what the operator's intent is, but like all of us that are watching the position of Pantheon, and you just described it well, they are completing the third of three wells that they drilled in their winter 2022 program. The most recent being the Alkaid-2 well that, as you described, they drilled a vertical well, tested, and then drilled a horizontal section, 5,800 feet, as per their announcement. And they're now getting ready to do a flow test of that horizontal section. Specifically to your question about the production from that well, we don't hold an override in the Alkaid unit. We only hold a 0.5% override in the Talitha unit. And so, no, we would not participate in that flow test volumes result from an override perspective. But certainly the outcomes of the Talitha testing and the Alkaid 1 testing that was done through the first two wells this year, plus Alkaid 2, as you've seen, with great volatility behind Pantheon, substantially uplifted their share performance. And, you know, it's obviously helped in position ourselves with our 3.272 million shares. The real question that you asked is, what is the value of our override? And the only thing I can say is that there's a methodology, the Black-Scholes model, on which you could look at and assess based upon the publicly announced resource ranges associated with Pantheon's description of the, the Talitha field. And from that, you can do an analysis, which we've done. We've not released that information, but let us simply say that, you know, with success and continuing success with Pantheon, it increases the value potential of that override. And there is always a market for overriding royalty interest. So it's something that we look at very carefully, and we track very carefully on a month-by-month basis, to assess, you know, in the best interest of our shareholders, how do we optimize the value proposition. The one thing we do know is that any development in Alaska, having worked there myself for almost 5 years, takes a long time. It's a 5 to 7 year development window. And so we're looking at the nature of how best to leverage our position as a shareholder in Pantheon and how best to position the value of that override in our portfolio on a go-forward basis, both of which have significant potential and both of which carry, you know, real value to us today and will so into the future.
Just on a follow-up, Mike, on that, if I could, would Otto sell your Parthenon shares? One thought that I had was that you sell the Parthenon shares, buy back Otto shares, getting a, for all intensive purposes, increasing the overriding royalty interest from 0.5 to, if you got 10, bought back 10% of the shares, logically it's 0.55%. Playing gymnastics a little bit with the, but I presume you understand where I'm coming from.
I do. And, you know, certainly I think the intent for how we would use the proceeds of the sale of Pantheon shares, if and when we chose to do so, would be a part of our fiscal strategy at that point in time. So it would be premature for me to say, you know, how that might be incorporated. Let me reiterate again that, you know, our intentions are to manage off of our balance sheet the ability to drill 4 to 6 wells per year, to strategically target PDP acquisitions of a size and scale that are meaningful to us as a company, but manageable within the construct of our balance sheet. And then thirdly, how that, you know, relative to that, we can use that cash, additional cash positions to return directly to our shareholders, buyback or dividend.
Okay, thank you. I'll press star one again and come back if I can.
Very good.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up from Chris Christoph, who is a shareholder. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call again. Just one more question for the moment. You mentioned that you've done lots of roadshow presentations. Looking back at your reporting to the ASX. I can't see any roadshow presentation. I'm a person that lives in Sydney, and I'd love to go to a roadshow, but it's never known when you're having one.
Very good. Certainly, you know, we participated in the Share Cafe, broker briefings. Most of the briefing, the roadshows that I've spoken to have been to institutional investors, accepting the broker briefing and the Share Cafe briefings, which were open to retail and investors alike. You know, we're certainly looking for opportunities. You know, obviously with COVID over the past 2 years and myself being located in the U.S., it was challenging to manage. So almost everything we've done has been virtual or videotaped and virtual. And if you go onto our website, you can actually see those historical presentations. We do a monthly short video, usually 3 to 4 minutes at maximum length, which tries to address either questions that I've received or questions that we've received during roadshow, desktop reviews, et cetera. So, Chris, I take that on notice, you know, fair challenge. We are looking at how we can do more of the types of Share Cafe broker briefings, which are allow you virtually to participate as an individual investor in observing and listening in on, you know, different companies' views. And there are other forums and forums like that. We're looking to expand into the U.S. similarly, to do similar types of forums here to give us greater exposure in the U.S. and looking at how we can connect through the London market as well, given that we have shareholder representation now in the U.S., the U.K., Europe, and Australia combined.
Right. Can I have one more question?
Please.
I'm a shareholder, and I believe there's great value to be found in this company, especially now that you've got 5 producing assets, not 6, because I don't really count these, but so small, and you only had 2 last year. Even if you guys did nothing, your cash position would grow quite significantly over the next 12 to 24 months. Your current enterprise value is less than 20% of your share price. Are you guys not worried about a takeover? Sure, the share price would increase by 50% or something like that, but that would be just be a tragedy considering how well you've grown the company. And without increasing your share price, you could easily be taken over.
Well, Chris, thank you for the recognition of our efforts and or in the turnaround of the company over the last couple of years. You're rightfully so. You know, we recognize that, you know, one of the challenges that we represent is we've got a very strong balance sheet and we've got no debt and we've got a strong cash flow generating position. And so certainly, you know, we recognize that there are parties that may choose to be interested in the company. And, you know, we've said that we're open to the idea of, you know, the right types of strategic mergers if, in fact, there was a friendly opportunity to build scale that collectively grew value for both sets of shareholders. To date, while we've had some interesting conversations and inquiries, nothing has led itself at this point to anything specific that would be disclosable to market. And as such, we continue to realize that risk, Chris. But at the same point in time, we have a couple of things that represent protection against a hostile takeover. We have a single shareholder who holds 48.4%, and between them and management, we control 51% of the company in that aspect. And so there is a built-in protection against a hostile takeover, but against the backdrop of a friendly takeover opportunity, we remain and recognize that as a potential strategic opportunity. We are looking at those, and we will continue to be open to and prepared to discuss those if, in fact, they create the right type of strategic value growth for our shareholders and a respective other party shareholder position.
Thank you. Your next question is a follow-up from Jack Cuthbert, who is a private investor. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, just one follow-up question. I mean, for a long time, clearly there's been a lot of emphasis placed on the organic growth piece. And, you know, the two major fields, the main income earners, you know, the information flow has gone pretty quiet on follow-up lightning drill. It's often been noted in presentations, but those dates come and go. Quarterly reports almost look copy-paste each quarter. Is there sort of some follow-up plans with Hillcorp? Hillcorp are keen to go ahead and drill the deeper well. And I guess the follow-up question to that is the F5 well at SM71. Clearly, you know, COVID struck during the drill, but those two just stick out as near-term wells with sort of high upside. Where are those placed and sort of are those currently in the sort of near-term drill picture?
Yeah, so I think as we've communicated, Jack, you're being a little harsh in that we haven't cut and pasted. We've actually updated as we've gone along. We acquired the seismic over the Matagorda field. We've done a complete and detailed field study of the field to be in lockstep with Hillcorp as operator in their position on the field. We've solicited cost estimates associated with the G3 well and its lookalike G4 well, which we've recently received. We're updating those cost estimates because of the increased cost associated with oil field inflation that's coming through the market right now, because they are expensive wells, as you can appreciate and probably recognize from the first round of drilling efforts and activities. And we continue to be fully aligned and engaged with our operator, Hillcorp, in terms of forward strategies on the right timing to develop the additional resource potentials in the Lightning field under the Matagorda field. Yes, the Lightning field with regards to that aspect. So it's work in progress. It continues. But we have done a lot over the course of the last 12 months in particular to give ourselves confidence in our understanding of the field. We ourselves technically have confidence in our geotechnical and geophysical characterization as well as reservoir characterization now of the Tex-Mex 1, 2, and 3 sands and a strategic framework for how we would proceed with a drill and complete and frac packing of those tighter sections, and we're working towards the implementation of that strategy with Hillcorp on a go-forward basis is all I can say at this point. With regards to South Marsh Island 71 F5, I believe, as we've indicated in discussions before, the F5 well, as you rightly pointed out, was suspended during COVID, having penetrated the D5 sands, which is the main reservoir in which both the F1 and the F3 produce. Both the operator and we have evaluated that well carefully and have agreed that the appropriate timing for the completion of that well and its sidetrack is as the F1 and F3 wells water out to slightly sidetrack that well into the updip attic position and allow it to capture the last remaining resource potentials in the D5 well. So we don't anticipate a re-entry into the D5 well in 2022-2023 timeframe based upon the continuing strong performance of the F1, F3.
Thanks for that, Mike.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Graham Nicholas with Global Mosaic. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mike. I guess this might be a bit off piece, but I guess I was really wondering how you come to Otto. Did they approach you? Did you approach them, or was it just part of an executive search and you applied? And perhaps what really attracted you to Otto, and sort of part two of that. This question is really, you've got a 3-year contract and the presentation seems like you'd that won't be leaving Otto in 3 years. Perhaps you will. Maybe you can add some clarity to that. And I guess, is there an extension clause in your employment contract? Might be the best way to ask the question.
Great question, Graham. It's one that, in very simple terms, and for any interested party, I started my career as a petroleum engineer out of the University of Oklahoma with Amoco. I spent 22 years with Amoco, which was one of the original Seven Sisters, Standard of Indiana. And then, of course, BP acquired Amoco in 1998. I was one of the few Amoco who, in my particular area at the time, Gulf of Mexico, came across to join the BP organization. And I spent the next 14 years with BP. So I've worked for one of the original Seven Sisters. I chose this industry not because my family had any connection to the oil and gas industry. It was an area that I became interested in, chose to study, and I've never regretted my 45 years now plus in the industry. It's been an amazing experience taking me all over the world. But I started with the Seven Sisters. I then came across to BP, which was, you know, at one point the second largest oil company in the world. And then in 2013, I left BP to join Woodside, who is Australia's largest oil and gas company at that time, and still is, of course, with its BHP acquisition, as their chief operating officer under a 5-year contract. So I've worked for a Seven Sisters, a largest super major oil and gas entity, the largest oil and gas, but on real terms, a mid-cap oil and gas. I then, at the end of my 5-year contract, returned to the U.S. and actually joined a private equity going public IPO opportunity called New Fortress Energy, which gave me that experience of working a private equity to IPO, which we successfully IPO'd, and the company is very successful. And filled my service and then retired at the end of 2019. I had a very good friend who was doing work on a consulting basis in supporting Otto in 2020, who gave me a call one August of 2020 and said, I'm working with a small Australian listed oil and gas entity. They've recently gone through some very difficult times, but you know, they've got quality assets. And what they need is leadership that has an understanding of the Australian market and the Gulf of Mexico market. And you were somebody I thought of. Would you be interested? And I said, no, I'm just retired and spent 6 months enjoying life in living on a lake in Georgia. And a week later, she called back and said, Mike, you know, we've known each other for 40 years. You owe me, at least talk to them. And after talking with them, I got excited about the fact that, you know, if you think full circle from an upstream, midstream oil and gas experience standpoint, I had never worked for a penny stock opportunity. And here was an opportunity to be a part of a team that had gone through some difficult times, but had tremendous upside potential. Could you turn the company around? Could you actually add value through leadership and your experiences to creating a penny stock into something substantial and significant, which is where we still sit? To your second half of your question, the 3 years was built around expecting, you know, with the reality of COVID, that it was going to take 18 months to 2 years to fundamentally rebase the company, much like my slide in the deck suggested, and that 2022 and 2023 would be the opportunity to, now having rebased the company, really let us hit our stride and start to show to the marketplace and to our shareholder base that their faith is going to be rewarded through our abilities to grow and create value. And that's where we sit today. And so that's continues to what keeps me excited. I love our industry. I love the reality of oil and gas and its importance to the world that we live in, and the fact that there's still so much more that we can do and contribute as an industry in shaping the realities of our future energy needs. I'm a consumer like all of you in that regard. So long-winded answer, Graham, to your question, but that's how I came to Otto, was through a friend giving me a call, and then, of course, the board interviewing me and deciding, yes, it was a match that could potentially work. And I think the results over these first 2 years are speaking for themselves. We've achieved a lot, but we know we've got a lot more to come. And I would close recognizing we're coming up to the end of the hour with this. We've just delivered the best financial year in the company's history, excluding 2015 when it was driven through the sale of Galox, so the sale of an asset before they pivoted to the U.S. We've driven our cost structure to a point where there's always more work to be done, and in an environment where inflationary pressures in the oil and gas industry are running between 15 and 17% in 2022, we're looking at holding our costs flat to decreasing in that aspect. We've doubled our portfolio in terms of producing assets and diversified our oil and gas mix in the backdrop of that. We've paid our debts to zero, and we've put into position, as we announced yesterday, a facility that allows us to continue to have access in the marketplace to financial means if we were to need them. Our intentions are not to use those facilities unless there is a game-changing opportunity that would, from an acquisition standpoint, allow us to build significant scale. But in this market, and as many of you who invest in the oil and gas industry on this call will appreciate, financing in the fossil fuels industry is extremely challenging. We spent a year testing the market, talking to more than 50 differing banks. RBLs are no longer a viable option unless you are extremely large entities in the fossil fuels business. Banks just are not interested in lending to RBL formats. We were very pleased to be able to renegotiate and extend the amendments that we have, the amendment on the facilities that we have with Macquarie at very competitive rates. You know, again, this is strictly my opinion, everything you read suggests that in the world of increasing inflation in the near term, weighted average cost of capital for manufacturing and producing industries is going to run plus or minus 15%. And so to have a facility at our disposal that is setting at 7.5 plus SOFR is a very competitive facility to have in our back pocket, and we're very appreciative of that ongoing relationship. Subsequently, we also don't have to hedge in order to have that facility in place until we did utilize those funds. And that hedging is to be negotiated under a structure very different from the previous time. So I close with saying this company is well positioned. It is frustrating that in an absolute and relative sense, the market has not demonstrated in our share price the true underlying value of the company. But I continue to remain confident that fundamentals of the financial marketplace will win through, and our continued demonstration of our abilities to grow the company through resources to reserves to production, through strategic acquisitions, and through selective and strategic utilization of cash in a buyback/dividend mode will all be an important part of rewarding our shareholders for their faith and continued conviction in owning auto and continuing to buy auto. With that, thank you very much for everyone's time. Appreciate it. And I'll turn it back to the operator to close the lines.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.